So I'm sure you're all very curious about why Mirabelle got involved in this project of writing a Vietnamese vegetarian cookbook. So let's start at the beginning, really. How did you first become interested in food and cooking?
I've always been... I come from quite an indulgent foodie family, I would say. And I think because my family... My dad was born in Holland and my mum is French Vietnamese. We always had a lot of food in the house and lots of different types of food. And so it was always kind of an event. And it was always something that was something quite that we sort of all centered around. It was quite special. And then, yeah, when I became a vegetarian, I was about 16, that probably kick-started why I got more interested in actually cooking food myself, because I had to make my own meals. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then and Vietnamese food, obviously, there was a strong family connection, but how did that start?
I think some of my earliest sort of best memories, food memories, are helping my mum cook for wrap spring rolls, pork spring rolls, and having sort of ginger stir fries with chicken and caramelised pork. And so when I became vegetarian, it was quite a big problem because fish sauce is so central to Vietnamese cooking that my mum was actually quite angry with me. And so at that point, I started to become more actively interested in the cuisine and how to sort of make dishes without fish sauce.
And so did you start, I mean, mainly learning from your mother, or were you reading cookery books as well?
I learned from my mother first, and I also learned from my aunties in Marseille. But then, yeah, when I started to cook for myself, I started ordering all the classic Vietnamese cookbooks and trying to do my own research because, yeah, I had to go beyond what I'd been taught.
And so, and you went to Vietnam first as a child, right? But the Yan Kiet So bursary gave you your first trip as an adult
yes.
to go and explore the food. And of course, Mirabelle was very lucky to have her personal photographer travelling with her. So she's going to show us some images. First of all, I think a bit about your family. Is that right?
Yeah, sure. Okay. This is my grandfather, my mum's dad, and my mum's family were a mixed French-Vietnamese family living in Saigon, and they had to leave after Dien Bien Phu when the French were resoundingly defeated, and they then emigrated to Marseille. And so in Vietnam, they were quite a relatively wealthy family, but this is my grandmother and two of my uncles in the early 50s. Obviously, when they came to France, they went from living in quite a nice villa in Saigon to just an apartment for the French military expats. And there were already 8 children, as you can see. So that's my grandfather on the left, and that's my grandma in the middle holding the baby. And those are her 8 children, and my mum wasn't even yet born, so it was quite a challenge, I think. That's my grandmother, I think in the early 90s, in her apartment in Marseille. This on the bottom right is my mum. I think in the 70s, or I'm not sure. The oldest sister, Hélène, is on the bottom left, and she would kind of marshal her younger sisters to learn all the traditional Vietnamese dances, which they hated. And so she looks slightly awkward, like bent over sideways. She's, two of her other sisters are above her there. So, I think part of the reason why I became so interested in Vietnamese cuisine is because my mum was born in France. She never really learnt. She never learnt to speak Vietnamese, and her mum never learned to speak proper French. And so, the only connection that I had with to that culture was the food that my mum cooked. That was kind of the only thing she retained consciously, even though I've later learned through travelling that she retained a lot more, just that it's not obvious.
Do you remember much about that first trip to Vietnam when you were a child?
I do. I have quite good home footage, actually, but which I don't have here now. But Vietnam has changed a lot in the last 10 years. I remember just there were a lot less mopeds and a lot more poverty you saw on the streets, whereas in September it was quite different. Developed very, very fast.
And apart from that, what were your first impressions of Vietnam? So you'd sort of grown up with memories of Vietnam, I guess, from your family, but actually going there yourself.
In when I was 10 or...?
No, when you went back last year.
It was a lot... it was a lot more... How do I say? It was more dense and busy than I'd ever expected. It was very, very different. Everything happens on the street. Everyone's outside all the time, drinking on the street, and it's very convivial. We also arrived just in the monsoon season, which was quite shocking as well, because I didn't actually realise it was going to be monsooning, so it was just raining all the time.
And what about the food? Was it like the food that you came across when you went there like what you'd grown up with?
No, because we were eating vegan food out there, it wasn't really anything like the stuff I'd grown up with. Because we centered our research around Buddhist food, because that's always vegan. It was plainer in some respects than the food I'd grown up with. It was a little bit more sort of staple type cooking. Yeah.
But what would you say? I mean, probably people here will, maybe know something already about Vietnamese food. For the people who don't, what would you say were the main characteristics of mainstream Vietnamese food?
I think mainstream Vietnamese food. What makes it slightly, for me, different to other Asian nationalities would be how fresh it is and the use of sort of very, very fragrant herbs like lemongrass and ginger all the time. And at every dish, you'll have a big plate of fresh herbs to add sort of maybe 5 or 6 different varieties. And there aren't really any heavy... There are fewer heavy... There are not really so many heavy sauces, and the processes are less... less heavy, I would say. It's, if you have a piece of fish, it tends to be grilled, or lightly fried. Yeah. I think the three main components of Vietnamese food are rice, vegetables, and fish sauce. Those are things that you'll find at every meal, whereas you might not find it the other stuff.
And how about sort of street food versus restaurants and home cooking?
Street food. The street food was relatively challenging as a vegetarian because it tended to be a lot of pho, which is the beef noodle soup, which I couldn't really have. and the restaurant cooking would tend to be lots of small dishes, prepared main courses. Whereas street food, you just get one bowl, sit on the street, or like a big hot pot, or something like that. And the home cooking was... probably a bit less fragrant generally than restaurant cooking. Let's say less rich.
What about the French influences? Are they still very strong, or is it like parallel to Vietnamese cooking?
The French influences are very strong, but it's where, for instance, on every street corner you'll see banh mi, which are baguettes made with rice flour, being sold as sort of sandwiches. And always in the stalls they'll have like laughing cow cheese, and also even something like pho is apparently the use of beef is supposedly named after the French feu, which for fire. So they think that that's a what's now the Vietnamese national dish was actually introduced by the French, I think. Yeah.
Did you grow up with French Vietnamese food as well as heritage?
Yes. Oh, sorry, how do you mean?
No, I mean, was the food that your mother was cooking, was it a mixture of French and
Vietnamese? Yeah, I mean, the food my mom cooked was, would be quite, like, because they're from the south, they're sort of Provençal influences. So lots of pasta and garlic and then like a stir fry next to it. So yeah, it was quite a strange mix and okay. A good mix.
And on your trip, did you travel around a lot?
Yeah, we started in Hanoi in the very far north. And then over 2 months, we worked our way down through the major cities and the small, sort of nice small towns as well. And then we went back up to Hanoi for my friend's wedding. My friend, my Vietnamese friend, who was getting married to a man from New Zealand in Hanoi.
Yeah. And so, is the food very regional?
It's very regional because there are very big climatic differences between the different regions. So the northern food is slightly more like Chinese food. So you'll have sort of stocks with a lot of star anise, and they use more soy sauce. And the further south you get, you'll find more curries and more sort of fresh herbs and vegetables, and a lot sweeter. They use sugar a lot, so it starts to seem like Cambodian or Thai food. As well, like in the south, they have effectively tropical climate, and they have two or three harvests a year sometimes, whereas in the north they have only one. So yeah, the northerners sort of have to work harder to live, and view the southerners as sort of a bit lazy and. Yeah, the southerners think northerners are quite austere.
Do you see different produce in the markets?
Yeah, I do. I have some pictures later for that. But particularly with fruit, you notice there was a lot more tropical fresh fruit available further south we got. And coconut products as well, because they all grow around the Mekong. Which is the river down at the very south of Vietnam. So around there, you'll get coconut in almost everything. So you'll have it in all the sort of cakes and all the any savoury dish will have a bit of coconut milk added to it as well.
Should we see some of your pictures?
Yeah. So we arrived. As you can see, we arrived in the monsoon. So there were buckets of rain. This is Hanoi. These are some friends who showed us around. And this is the Buddhist home cook called Loy, who we stayed with for a week whilst we were in Vietnam. And she was very kind enough to show us around her local market, where she showed me a lot of herbs that I'd never really seen before. And I think some of them you can get in Asian supermarkets in London, but I've never used them, and you wouldn't find them in Sainsbury's or anything.
So which ones particularly?
So, for instance, this one, in the plastic bag, it's sawleaf herb, and that's a really northern herb that you have in pho. And it's quite a sort of strong coriander flavour, and also zaozam, which is more of a sweet coriander flavour that we're going to have in the tofu dish that we serve later, in the ginger caramelised tofu dish.
So is it a variety of what we know as coriander normally, or is it a totally different thing? Do you know?
I'm not actually sure. Honestly, that I've seen so many different English variations of that name. I've seen Vietnamese mint, Vietnamese coriander, so I'm not actually sure. But they taste like coriander, but sweeter. And this is Pruptiato, perilla, which... is sort of has this kind of citrusy flavour, which goes very well in on salads.
So are the herbs mostly used raw?
Yes. You normally add herbs raw at the end. It's like a personal thing. You sort of choose which ones you like, and they go in different combinations for each dish. Each region will tend to use more of various types of herbs. And this particular market was a northern Hanoi market, so the herbs are quite used in those sort of slightly more coriander-based northern dishes. this is the market vendor's morning bowl of soup, which everybody has out there. And also a lot of sticky rice for breakfast, which we had a lot, which was good for us as vegetarians.
So you just eat it on its own?
Yeah, you just eat it with beans there, and it's a bit like fish and chips, like a really good breakfast snack.
So do you have it with anything, or just...
No, like... you just eat it with your hands, and it's really good. That one has mung beans and shallot oil all over it, and crispy fried shallots on top as well. But again, that changed further south. Further south, it was less oniony flavoured, and everything would be more sweet. It was almost like a sweet snack.
So is that the sort of archetypal breakfast, or are there lots of other different things you might have for breakfast? Yeah.
That was an archetypal breakfast that you would sort of pick up. Maybe if you were a housewife, you'd pick it up in the morning on your morning shop at the market. Or you might have that, or you might have a bowl of soup. But if you had less time, you might have some rice. And also in Hanoi, we were lucky enough to be shown around by a chef called Tracy Lister. She's an Australian chef who specialises in Vietnamese food, and she showed us some of the local produce. And one thing I noticed out there was that all the vegetables were more colourful and seemed sweeter than even things like chilies that you get here. They were redder. But also things like this, a bitter gourd, which you can actually steam and stuff with tofu. I didn't try that, but that I'd never seen before at all.
Do you find that the Vietnamese food in London, is it from one particular region, or how did that relate to what you saw in Vietnam?
It depends where you go. On the King's Lamb Road in Shoreditch, a lot of the stuff is northern. So you might not get such a big plate of herbs when they serve it to you. Normally if something's southern, it's sort of advertised in the title, like Saigon, Saigon. And otherwise, I generally find that it tends to vary around northern, slightly heavier cuisine. And those were the street vendor stores. You can see they hang books up underneath and have their iced lemon tea. This is, as we went to Hoi An, which is in the middle of Vietnam, we started seeing a lot more fruit. So things like rambutans and passion fruit, guavas, persimmon, dragon fruit. Yeah, just started seeing it all over the place, and it was very, very, very cheap. It was very easy to eat. This was on the Mekong Delta, on the floating market of Can Tho, and that's really the rice basin of Vietnam. And so they have a big, huge market where these massive boats come with laden with tropical fruit, and then the smaller boats come up, sort of selling drinks and buying from the bigger boats. This is about 6 a.m.
So how do you buy things from these boats? Do you have to go off on a boat as well?
We had to take a tourist boat on that, and then we had all the smaller boats coming up to the boat and trying to sell us drinks and coffee and things. It was good. On the Mekong, we also saw rice. That's rice paper being made, stretched out in wicker baskets. We saw rice is used in so many different forms, but that one we will have later is used to wrap spring rolls. And one thing that was interesting was in Vietnam, the paper is never as thick as it is over here. Because it's so humid, you don't need to... it doesn't really dry out, so you don't even need to wet it before you wrap up a spring roll.
So what about the ways in which rice is used then, apart from this?
So you'd have sticky rice for breakfast, and then you'd have normal jasmine rice for lunch. And you have rice noodles, which we'll be having later, and rice wrappers and rice cakes. A lot of rice flour is used to make sweet cakes and savoury cakes.
Is that like sort of fluffy cakes or heavy?
Both. Sort of mixed with coconut on the Mekong. I have a picture somewhere. You have like a sort of a rice coconut crumpet. That was really good and very sweet. But also more sort of dumpling type, denser rice with a sort of sweet bean filling in the middle. find that a lot as well. And even rice, ground rice powder, we've used in one of the recipes, which we'll be having later. So roast whole grains of rice and then grind it up and sort of lace it through spring roll mix, and it gives it kind of nutty flavour, which is very good for vegan cuisine.
Mm. Is that a bit like the Vietnamese pancakes?
No, but those as well. the rice flour and turmeric and sort of coconut milk to make a sort of flat yellow pancake, which I have some pictures of later, and just find out. But yeah, they're further down. This is actually Lloyd was very welcoming to us when she was showing us vegan cuisine. And it's a reaction that we didn't expect after the reaction that I'd had from my French family. I assumed that when my French family had sort of thought that when they thought it was sort of not natural to go vegetarian, I assumed that that was because they were Vietnamese, but it's not the case at all. And when we showed up there, we were actually quite welcomed and respected for being vegetarians, and everyone thought it was quite good. And nearly everyone in Vietnam goes vegetarian occasionally, perhaps once a month for holy reasons. So yeah. And Loy took us to her local pagoda, where she was sort of leader of the congregation, and we were also given private lessons by another friend's auntie in her lovely house in the centre of Hanoi. And when she saw that Luke was taking pictures, she got dressed up and put... this is her before. And I'm matching her tonight with my jade as well. And they have these lovely old houses, which are quite small, but sort of built on top of each other and sort of layered over the top of each other. This was her auntie gave us a sort of a masterclass in vegan cuisine, and helped us make two sort of special salads. And this is a taro root stem, which we sort of salted to get all the poisonous water out before making into a very, very nice salad. I'll flip to the salad picture. Yeah, that was the outcome. And this was a banana blossom salad, which instead of using beef, she roasted a lot of sesame powder to sort of give it a nuttiness and put fresh tofu through it as well. And then covered it in kinzoi, which is lemon balm, which we have some samples of outside if you want to smell them later. But I should go back to this because what she asked us whether we should use this as a dressing or not, because it's full of garlic, and Buddhists aren't really supposed to eat garlic, ginger, or onions, any of the pungent herbs, because they make you smell a bit carnal, and that's not holy. Which sometimes worked because it pushed the chefs to be quite delicate and interesting with the way they use the way they cook, but sometimes it was just very, very bland. And we ate a lot of fried tofu, and after a while, that became quite intense. I should show you this picture of... this was a fish on the Mekong that was being kept as a pet, and it was a carnivorous fish, but they only fed it vegan food, because apparently if you feed it meat, then it gets sort of overexcited and would eat the other fish in the tank. So I thought that was quite a good illustration of the way that they... So veganism is seen as a sort of method of self-control, and it's kind of gendered in the way that where most of the Buddhists and the vegans we met were women, and it was also seen as something more appropriate for older people as well, which I started to feel... I found that a little bit uncomfortable it didn't really... I felt like... Because that's not really why I am a vegan. And so it was not kind of very foody, if you know what I mean. mushrooms are used primarily to replace meat all the time. And sometimes this was really, really delicious. We'll be having a bunchayo, which is a mushroom stuffed spring roll. But sometimes it was a little bit too much as well. This is how they would sell tofu. Generally, they'd sell it fresh, and then you could have it deep, and you would generally deep fry it, and then have it in a dipping sauce. So,
do they have any sort of fermented tofus or stinking tofus?
They do.
Should
I flick through to show you?
No, just in your own time. Yeah,
they do. The fermented tofu is used generally. It's a really good way to replace fish sauce because it kind of has that kind of tanginess that binds the dish together. And without it, it's really not the same. So the better chefs used that quite a lot and used it carefully at the same time. Otherwise, it tended to be almost like... It was almost like a carb, like something that you'd just find a bit of deep fried at every meal rather than... It wasn't really treated like meat in that way. It wasn't treated as a kind of a delicious main protein, which I didn't. I got a little bit tired of that. Sometimes we ate some really delicious fresh tofu, and sometimes we had a lot of fried tofu. But tonight we should be making some soft caramelized ginger tofu upstairs, so that should hopefully be some of the better examples. This was a lovely cooking course we did where she stuffed the tofu with, as if it were a fish, with sort of crushed lemongrass and ginger and chilies, and then sort of fried it. And then the dipping sauce made out of soy and chilies was really what cut through the friedness of the tofu and gave it some sort of zing. It was good. Let's talk about we were told at that cooking class that the best place for vegan food in Vietnam is Hue, which is the centre of Vietnam, because it's the imperial capital and it has the most pagodas, and therefore had the most Buddhists. And also because it's regionally quite isolated in the middle of Vietnam, it has a different climate, it's quite mountainous. And in the sense, they don't have that much livestock, so they're used to sort of making a lot out of the vegetables that they have and rice dishes. So they have quite an elaborate vegan cuisine there. It's probably the best in Vietnam, and used a lot of vegetables specific to that region in vegan cooking. We were lucky enough to be given a tour of a pagoda garden. This farmer was farming mushrooms in a shed to grow for the restaurant attached to the pagoda. I'm just going to take a drink.
So when you say vegetarian in the Vietnamese context, do you always mean vegan?
Yes, I do. I'm sorry for it not being clear. And not only vegan, sort of a vegan who doesn't eat pungent herbs either.
So is that because, I mean, it seems to be suggesting that all vegetarians in Vietnam are doing it for Buddhist reasons?
Almost all. I mean, I think only recently has, in the major cities, and probably because of the influence of tourists and expats, vegetarianism being seen as, veganism as being as a kind of health thing, more as a health choice. But generally... It was a religious thing, yeah.
And so are most people part-time vegetarians, like just for holy days and things, or did you meet many people who were vegetarian all the time?
The only people who were vegetarian all the time were monks and nuns, or very, very devout Buddhists. All foreigners like us. I really didn't expect to find that in Vietnam. I didn't realise that they would have such a developed, strong sense of veganism, but that it was going. But it was also religious. I perhaps didn't do enough research, but it was much easier to eat vegan food in Vietnam than I expected it to be. There were wholly vegan restaurants all over, because nearly every pagoda has a restaurant attached to it to raise money for the pagoda. Whereas, obviously, in London, you get many fewer vegan restaurants, and there'll just be a vegetarian option on the menu. In Vietnam, you would get restaurants where there weren't really any vegetarian options on the menu, but hundreds of vegan restaurants. And as long as you just Googled them beforehand, it was very, very easy to eat.
So are they always attached to monasteries?
Not always, but a lot of the time, yeah, they would be, yeah. There's also a chain, Loving Hut. I think that's an international chain, but they were all over the place as well.
And one of the things, because certainly in China, in monastic communities, they eat very, very simple vegetarian food.
Yes.
But they also have this tradition of fake meat and fish cookery, yes, which is quite elaborate. Do you have that in Vietnam too?
Yeah, it was very similar, where, as I said before, the home sort of vegan cooking that like a quite devout family might eat was very simple. But then in the sort of more elaborate restaurants, they would make a lot of mock meat and serve things that were sort of meat imitations, even things like crispy crackling made from flour, which I have some, yeah, I've got some pictures of, actually.
I just wondering what were the most sort of surprising and ingenious sort of fake meat dishes?
I had a really horrible, flour prawn, like a prawn that was quite slimy made out of flour, and that wasn't very good. But we had some funny, gluten fish as well, which was not so nice. But on the other hand, I think the most successful, I think it was when they combined tofu and mushrooms, because that really had better flavour than just a plain gluten thing. In spring rolls and stir fries as well. That was better. Yeah. And I'll show you some pictures of the monastery garden where they would grow everything fresh. That's green tea. And this was interesting. It was called Paro. The nun called it Paro. And it's like a mild spring onion. And it was sort of a way of getting onion flavour and without actually eating an onion. So they use that a lot in Hue. And we had a lot of pickled paro, which is, in some ways, was quite good because it was a little bit more delicate than an onion and it made the cuisine more fragrant than if you just used a lot of onion. That's a root, yeah, it's an upside down spring onion. It reminded me a bit when medieval monks ate swans on Good Friday instead of, because they were only supposed to eat fish in the West, but anyway, it's not quite, perhaps not as bad as that. I never worked out what the name of that vegetable was, but yeah. Okay.
So when you cut them, they look like jumping people. They always remind me of that, Matisse dance, the dance, because you cut them and they have all these strange limbs going up.
Yeah, yeah. And she stir-fried them for us later. We had this was the head chef in the restaurant, and they treated us to a feast. They were very kind to us. So I think you can see the beans there on the right, they're just half cut off, chopped up. But this dish was quite unusual. When you make tofu, a skin forms on top. It's like making cheese, and you can take the skin off and then sort of press it, and it was pressed into little rice bowls and then fried upside down like that and put upside down, it was actually very, very tasty when you dipped it with soy sauce, as you can see. And also, you can see some sort of more basic soy substitutes for meat. They're those triangular things, which were delicious when fried with sort of a lot of lemongrass and fresh tomatoes, and they were very good. But I'd have to say, the best vegan food that we ate in Hue, I did a special cooking class with someone who, because in Hue they have a tradition called royal, a sort of royal tradition, royal cuisine, which is very, very elaborate. And it kind of can combine with the vegan cuisine to make this sort of really fancy vegan cuisine, basically. And these were bitter figs that grow in Hue that they only use sort of to replace flavours in the central region. So this lady, she cooked some really lovely So this is fried gluten that she cooked with, she deep fried and then sort of put it with lots of fresh tomatoes and lemongrass and papaya roots, and then she wrapped them in betel leaves there on the right and fried them, and then that was great. But yes, here is she uses a lot of fermented fried tofu as well, which you can see in the white bowl, like the white stuff coming out of that bowl there. And that she used to add into the hot pot to give it a kind of fishy tanginess. And also in that dipping sauce there, it's made from peanuts and fermented soy sauce, which was really, really strong. But she used it carefully, and it was very, very good. And that's used for the ban huai, which are those crispy turmeric pancakes. They're made with beer in the batter. And they stuff them with bean sprouts and tofu and mushrooms, and then you dip them in the peanut sauce. So that was probably definitely the best food we had in Vietnam, I think.
It was delicious.
Here she is. Apparently, she changed her name, so she had a sort of Buddhist epithet and made it sort of 7 words long. I can't remember it. But here she is making a dragon from made from a dragon fruit and carrots and chilies. There it is. And then she was stuck. Here's a better picture. She stuck spring rolls on it with matchsticks. And then it's got a chili for a beak and a headdress, obviously. I tried to do that, but I wasn't as good as her. We'll try to recreate those spring rolls later, but not with the dragon fruit. And here she even carved a rose out of tomato skins and cucumbers and things. It was lovely. And her salad was very elaborate. So she's got banana blossoms in the middle, shredded up very finely, which are sort of, for me, in texture there, it's a bit like lemongrass. It's quite crispy. And then all around the sides you've got fried tofu, mushrooms, carrots, pickled paro, red cabbage, pineapples, and green onions, and then you mix it all together and put the dressing over the top of it. And I think this is quite a good illustration of what's quite special about Vietnamese food. It uses a lot of very, very fresh ingredients, and each on their own don't necessarily amount to that much, but it's when you put it all together with sort of a tangy, sort of delicate but tangy sauce that sort of, it becomes very, very vibrant. Going back to what we were talking about with puddings and rice, this was one of another auntie, a friend's auntie, who made little sort of rice dumpling cakes for us. And in Vietnam, they don't really have desserts in the way that we see them. It's more sweet snacks, and they're quite carby. So they generally have some kind of carb dumpling outer layer and then a sort of beany sweet filling. So
you wouldn't have them after a meal necessarily?
No, they'd be something you'd often eat on the street, actually, or this is a special dish that you would only have at the New Year. They're little rice flour dumplings with sesame seeds on top and a little piece of cane sugar in the middle. Mm-hmm. And these were really interesting. They're called ban eat in Hoi An, in the centre of Vietnam, and they were... This was the lovely lady who sold them to us. They're little sort of rice dumplings, with a sweet yellow mung bean filling. But as you can see, when you steam them, the leaves stain the rice sort of purple. Thank you. Yeah, and lots of donuts. All with different types of fillings, like peanuts and sesame seeds and red beans, banana.
Just going back to, because obviously when you think about Vietnamese food in general, some of the most famous things are the pho, the beef soup, noodle soup, and all the sort of prawn dishes, prawn rolls and things like that, and the fish sauce. So were you conscious when you were collecting recipes of looking for substitutes for these things, or do you think Vietnamese cooks look for equivalents? So is that, you know, what about soups and things for vegetarians?
Soups were quite a tricky one, because if you don't put stock in a soup, then it just tastes like vegetables in water. I struggled to find very good soups, but again, yeah, I thought that the best soups were probably the ones where they used a lot of fermented tofu, to flavour the stock better.
Oh, fermented tofu in soup?
Yes, yeah, in a hot pot, yeah.
Yeah. And then fish sauce, you were sort of saying sort of soy sauce and chilies.
Yeah, I think you can kind of get away with... I use light soy sauce, actually, to replace fish sauce, which is not as dark and not as mushroomy in flavour, and it's more just sort of salty. And I think that most dipping sauces in Vietnam, even when you use fish sauce, you sort of mix it with garlic and sort of sweet water and chilies and lime juice. So when you do that with a light soy sauce, then that kind of gives a different but a sort of powerful flavour as well.
Mm. And have you tried cooking your Vietnamese vegetarian food for meat eaters, for example, here, and what do they think, if so?
It's been easier to impress English people rather than Vietnamese people. When I made a curry for the family we stayed with in Hanoi, and it was probably more stressful than cooking here tonight, or more stressful than doing a supper club last year, because they know what they like, and if you sort of mess it up, then they think it's weird. So they weren't sure about it, and they were saying, "Oh yeah, I made a tofu curry for them," which other people have loved, but they were like, "Is this Indian food?" Or and they were like, "Oh yeah, well, I'll make you a tofu curry tomorrow." And they made another one, and they were like, "Yeah, that's a tofu curry, not what you did." But yeah, it depends. Some Vietnamese people like vegan food, my vegan food as well.
And people here, for example, who are not Vietnamese but who like Vietnamese food.
I've got quite a hard... Yeah, I mean, yes, I've got quite exact... Because my parents, although they're not here tonight, they're quite exacting. My dad's a big meat lover, and so when I've cooked for them, I have to... I think that's probably one of the reasons why I've worked so hard to try and recreate flavours to be quite powerful, because they really want it to taste like meat. So I cook, because I grew up being a carnivore, I try and cook tofu as if it's meat. So I think about marinating it and flavouring it like as if it were a bit of pork or a bit of fish, rather than something to fry as an occasional vegetarian meal.
So with your book, you're partly reporting from Vietnam and describing the culture, is that right?
Yes, yeah. I kept a notebook out there, and I wanted to keep a kind of travel log of my experiences out there and kind of compare them to my memories of Vietnamese culture from when I was visiting my family who are in Marseille, and to sort of mix up all the different memories and center them around food. I don't know how successful it will be as a project yet, but I'm trying.
And what about with the recipes then? So are you going to be doing strictly authentic Vietnamese recipes, or are you going to be sort of, it sounds like, with so introducing marinating and things? That...
Yeah, we did eat. I'm not saying that they don't marinate tofu out there. It will be a mixture of Vietnamese vegan cuisine and then my sort of vegetarian adaptations of vegan dishes. Which might have a few more additives like garlic and things like that. But also, one thing I'm really keen on, well, those were the coconut crumpets, but one thing I'm really keen on is in sort of writing about, I think that's lemongrass creme brulee, and sort of French Vietnamese fusion desserts. I got quite interested in them out there. I think I sort of enjoyed the playfulness. The chefs had a lot of playfulness when they were approaching kind of French classics, and I thought that was interesting, and sort of adapting them for with using Vietnamese ingredients like lemongrass, and also that's a really good jam, but using passion fruit. Yeah, so I'd like to have a lot of those recipes in there as well.
From your trip, was there any sort of standout dish that you fell in love with?
Yes, the one we're serving tonight, bún chao yo, which is quite a simple dish, but it's really powerful when all the elements combine. So you've got a noodle salad with plenty of herbs and bean sprouts and cucumbers, and then topped with a sort of stuffed mushroom and tofu spring roll, and then poured over a kind of soy lime chili dressing and with more herbs. Hmm. That one was, we had that for breakfast almost every day in Saigon. Yeah, it was a big bowl.
And what else are you serving tonight, in case anybody would like to find out more about it?
Not those. There's coconut. These are interesting. They were shaped like madeleine, so I'm not sure whether that was because of the French influence or not, but they were little coconut sort of cakes. But this, we will be serving a version of this, which is ginger caramelised tofu.
Mm. Is that all your pictures then for now? Should we have some questions?
Yeah, have some questions.
Anybody, any questions? Lady in front? I think there's a microphone coming, so...
Who was it?
The lady in the front in the stripy shirt.
Did you grow up in Marseille or in England?
No, I grew up in London, in Twickenham, because my mum came to England when she was quite young. So.
With her parents?
No, she left when she was about 18. The rest of her family are still in Marseille.
Any other questions? Here, lady in the middle.
Thank you so much for your talk. I thought it was absolutely wonderful and mouth-watering. And I was really impressed by how much you managed to get done in the couple of months that you were there. And from what you told us, some of the people that you met were your sort of aunts and relatives. But can you tell us a bit about how you went about sort of talking to the people that you ate the kind of restaurant food or the street food, and how people responded when you wanted to know their recipes?
Actually, I didn't mean that they were my aunts. They were all my friends' aunts and uncles, like extended families. I managed to get quite a lot of contacts out there through the Vietnamese embassy in the UK, who Asia House helped me to contact, actually, who put me in touch with some of the specialist chefs. But also friends that I'd made in London, Vietnamese students, were really very kind and very happy to receive us when we went there, and they introduced us to their parents and their aunts and uncles, and also the embassy provided me with a letter, which I didn't know what it meant, but it was a letter of introduction, and apparently on it says you must help this woman. So when I sort of would take that into the kitchens and show it to the chefs without realizing what it meant, and immediately they were just offering me free glasses. Yeah, they did. No, they did. They helped a lot in the preparation. Yeah, that's good.
One in the middle here.
I'm just wondering when your book's coming out.
Oh, I haven't got a book deal, so who knows? But I'm writing the proposal now and writing chapters about. No, Food from the Jade Clove. Yeah, that's the working title, yeah. I'm just writing a chapter about lemongrass creme brulees at the moment, so, and sugar in my family. So.
I've got two questions. The first one is, how healthy do you think that the recipes you learnt were? Because obviously there was some deep-fried food. And then the second question is, so those three new herbs that you mentioned, if one wanted to find them in London, where would one go?
Okay, that's interesting about the question of healthy food, because, Vietnamese food is, in general, it's extremely healthy. and not much fat at all, and like just little bits of sugar and everything fresh. But the vegan food is another story. For some reason, a lot of deep-fried food, and not just tofu, but would be like battered fritters of sweet potato fritters and things. And I think perhaps that's something to do with like making it more substantial if you don't have meat. I'm not sure exactly why. But it wasn't always that healthy. And that's, I think, probably one of the changes I'm making in my own recipes. I'm trying to use a bit less oil. So, for instance, I'm slightly more interested in this tofu dish here that's fresh, not deep fried, and just marinated in soy and sugar. With the herbs, you can get them all from Longdan. You can get most of them from Longdan, which is a chain of Vietnamese supermarkets, so all around parts of central London. They're normally quite good. Or in Chinatown, they have quite a few. But probably the specialist stuff is in Longdan.
The way I understand, you have mostly visited the chefs and restaurant to get the basics. But did you have a chance to meet to grandma's age and talking to them what food they were cooking and making and eating at that time, in their time?
My grandparents.
No, your grandma's time.
Oh, in that time. I'm not quite sure
what recipes from the older generation in Vietnam. You mean sort of home cooks?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, we spent a lot of time with home cooks. So the lady who took us to the pagoda, the food is a little bit simpler, I would say, sort of that generation were making. And not as complicated. And maybe... I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's changed that much, though, as a cuisine. It doesn't seem, like, especially the vegan food, it seems like it's sort of stayed the same for a long time. So probably what we were eating in pagodas and restaurants was would have been what people were eating in an older generation, apart from, obviously, times when Vietnam have had sort of severe famine, obviously, and... shortages, but yeah.
So you
it wouldn't be very refined.
Sorry?
It would not be very refined at that time. It would be a
problem. I think it's been quite good for a long time. Obviously, not during a famine.
Do you come across any sort of trendy commercial vegetarian cooking?
I don't think vegetarian cooking is trendy yet in Vietnam. I think that it's seen as like, you know, sort of, yeah, grandma food, a little bit more. I think that the trendy stuff is like spaghetti and pizzas and kebabs. We didn't really see many sort of, yeah, not too many sort of new restaurants that were vegan.
Any more questions?
Following on what the gentleman said, did your grandparents, what did they do cook, or what sort of food did they cook?
Yeah, my grandparents, because they're from the south, because they were a part of kind of the, my grandfather was in the French army, they had quite a strange hybrid food, I think, so they used things like condensed milk a lot, and... my mum's addicted to baguettes with vache qui riz and things like that. So it's kind of a weird sort of mix of southern Vietnamese flavours with French imports. And yeah, so apparently things like, nothing would be too sweet, so mashed sweet potato with added condensed milk would be something that my granddad liked a lot, apparently.
So what made you interested in cooking?
Wanting to eat better food than I could cook at home. Probably my drive to cook is driven by my drive to eat.
One more, I think.
Just wondering, do you speak Vietnamese? Wondering what sort of level of discussion you could have with the people you met who were cooking.
I speak.
And whether that, if you don't, do you feel that you did get right down to them telling you what they were doing?
Yeah, it was quite challenging because I don't speak Vietnamese. But we did, again, Asia House were kind enough to set me up with a tutor before I left for Vietnam. So I did actually know, I've forgotten some of it now, but I knew a lot of food vocabulary. I think she's here tonight, Chow, my tutor. I'm not sure. I knew like the names of herbs and lots and rice and sort of five different types of rice noodles, but I couldn't really say sort of hello, how are you? So that was useful for note taking. Yeah. Sometimes it was challenging. Like when I was lucky, I had an interpreter because luckily people were so kind, especially with my letter. people sort of offered their translation services for free quite a lot, and just friends would come along for the lessons, or it would be someone's auntie so my friend would translate for me. So I actually use Viet Pro is a Vietnamese organisation in the UK that connects up, and that's how I met quite a few sort of students in London sort of 2 years ago who sort of hooked me up with people in Vietnam, because a lot of them had actually gone home to Vietnam by the time we went there, and were able to show us around. But sometimes it was challenging. I used a dictionary to write sort of ingredients lists, and went round with the marketplace with my friend's mother, and I kept putting wrong things down. She just kept buying like anything that I'd written, but I'd often written it wrong. But she was very kind anyway, and didn't mind.
I think there was one more at the back here.
Yeah, I was just curious about your decision to be vegetarian or vegan in the first place, and if you could talk a bit more about that, and whether you are now vegan or whether it's just in the Vietnamese context that you're vegan.
Yeah. I think I've always connected my decision to be vegan when I was about 16 to... Actually, part of it was trying to become a bit autonomous from my parents, and in that sense, to take control of what I was cooking at home. Because they were very, very, very into their meat, and so it was kind of a way, sort of a teenager moving away from that kind of control. I remember my last meat was my mum's stuck a big slab of veal in front of me one day, and I was like, this is the last meat I will eat. But I'm still vegetarian, though, yeah, and I just apply it generally, and it's not just to do with Vietnamese cuisine.
But do you eat eggs and dairy?
I eat eggs and dairy, which is why I'm changing the recipes I found to be sort of Western-style vegetarianism rather than vegan. And I mean, although you could have them vegan, I prefer to eat dairy products and to sort of make things richer generally.
And more at the back there.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'd like to ask you to reflect back, Mirabelle, on what it's been like since you first decided to apply to the award down to now and where you are, and what advice you give to someone who was looking to apply for the Yenkitso Prize in future.
I'd say a lot's changed for me. I was one of the main reasons I applied was because I was desperate to go to Vietnam, and I'd been desperate for a while, and I'd started a blog that had food and stories and a lot of even things. I was reading Vietnamese poetry and things, and so when I saw that Asia House, I was looking at Asia House out of my own interest. And when I saw that they had this award, I thought, well, yeah, this would be perfect. And what's been so good about it is there haven't really been any strings attached. and it's been very open in terms of what I could do with the bursary. And so, for instance, although I applied and I wanted to write, I was saying I was going to write a straight cookbook, and that's what I thought I was going to do. During the travelling, after keeping more and more notebooks and writing sort of a bit more stories as well as recipes, I'd want to change the book a bit more towards that way. And Asia House have been and Betty, who set up the award, actually, has been completely fine with that.
Okay, is it time to eat something?
I lived in Vietnam in Saigon for 4 years, and from my experience, when you don't have meat or fish with your lunch or dinner, for Vietnamese people, it's like you had no food at all. You need to have fish or meat with, and vegetables, obviously. So when you went around, and you know, probably people asked you, you know, the reason why you were looking such in. Vegetarian food. How did they respond to that? They found it like...
Like about 80% was positive, because if you say ăn chay, it means... I think it means eat veggies, literally. And I think that word might be linked to understandings of Buddhist vegan cuisine, and they just assumed that that's what I was into, and they had no problems with it at all, and they would try and accommodate it as much as possible. So I think maybe that vocab helped a lot in terms of triggering a certain understanding what sort of food you wanted. Yeah, they were really positive.
I mean, they didn't find like a strange that you were just searching for vegetarian food to write a book, like, you know, just common people,
Well, no, because they all thought I was researching Buddhism, and they thought that was great.
Yeah.
So they all just pointed me towards the pagodas, and it was fine, yeah.